This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Good morning. You're listening to 3CR 855 AM. Beaming to you, as always, from the beautiful unceded lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. It's just gone past 11:30 AM, which means that you are listening to Out of the Blue. My name is Tessa Campisi and I'll be your captain this fine morning. On today's show, we're dipping our toes into the wonderful world of seaweed foraging. We'll be back after this.
3CR's radio program, The Boldness, is looking for women and or gender diverse volunteer presenters to join our team. Training is provided to all 3CR presenters. If you are interested in finding out more, please contact 3CR's volunteer coordinator on 03 9419 8377 or email volunteers@3cr.org.au.
Foraging for wild food is one of the most direct and sustainable ways that we can engage with the food that we eat. Wild food isn't grown with pesticides or fertilizers. It doesn't require fossil fuel-powered tractors or irrigation systems. It hasn't been refrigerated and trucked backwards and forwards between warehouse and warehouse and supermarket. It's deeply liberating to learn about the edible wild foods around us. And on top of that, foraging is just really fun. I had the wonderful privilege of joining Chris Rockley down near her home in Portland, Victoria, on Gunditjmara country. Chris is professionally trained as a scientific illustrator, pairing her keen passion for the environment with art and a good dash of advocacy. She's an avid forager of all sorts, but lately has been running workshops about edible seaweeds. Before we sauntered down to the shoreline, however, Chris ran me through some of the laws around seaweed foraging.
Basically, the thing is, for people foraging, it's collection needs to be done by hand, so you can't go in with machinery and take it.
Uh-huh.
And seaweed's not removed from marine protected areas and has to be washed up on the beach naturally, so not harvested from living or submerged.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you're not allowed to take stuff that's still holding on in the water?
Not at all. Mm. So it's really only beach cast seaweed. So you go somewhere, like we've seen some dogs go down there this morning. So you've got to really be careful on where you get it from. Mm.
So that might be contaminated.
Yep, contamination is a massive thing when you're foraging.
The laws around seaweed foraging, Chris tells me, are a bit of a grey area and differ from state to state. So it's best to check up on your local laws before heading out for a ramble.
When I spoke to fisheries and a few other people, at what point would they stop someone from foraging? And they basically said if they pulled their car up to the back of the beach and started putting in big buckets of seaweed, they would stop them and they'd get a fine. But if you were taking, say, enough, this is what I try and train people to do, just take enough for your recipe and try and learn a bit more before you start taking stuff.
And this, for Chris, is a really key point. When foraging for seaweed, it's important to respect the local laws, but it's also important to respect the seaweed itself as a slimy, salty, thriving ecosystem.
When I first started, I was so excited about seaweed that I was like, hey, this, we can eat this, we can eat that. And I was a little bit too excited about it. a couple of the foragers I ran, they were bigger ones, like for the councils, and there was quite a few people there that didn't speak English as their first language. I think that they thought I was saying that you could pretty much go out and get whatever you wanted to, and I heard reports back that some people did. Every week they went and got more than what they needed, and it was a bit of a shock for me to hear that, and I started putting in some regulation on what I was talking about. And that was almost the first thing I told them, is only take what you need. Because what are you going to do with it otherwise?
Yeah.
It's just going to end up smelly in your refrigerator. or, you know, you could dry it, you could do other stuff to it, but just take what you need and use that as a lure of foraging, in not just in seaweed but in weeds and all of that kind of thing that I was teaching as well. And that's really helped, because they're like, oh, we can only take this much. And now the laws are backing that up, so I'm really happy with that. And we also used to teach that you could take two buckets for composting and for seaweed solution. You could make a seaweed solution out of it. But I realised, like, as I was going on my journey, that a lot of things live in that rack, and there's real importance for it being there. That rack is stopping the beach eroding, and all of those creatures that live in that rack over daytime, they need that moisture and they need that protection. And the birds that forage in there to get all those insects. So there's a real ecosystem in there. So it's been a bit of a journey, and I think now I try and train people more about the ecology. Yes, you can eat these, take what you need for what you need, but it was more about getting people in the water, seeing how important it is as an ecosystem. Yeah.
Beautiful. Shall we go down and have a look?
And I just want to show you Convincing Ground, because I love it here. So this is a good example of a place that I would normally forage from. And as close to the water as I can, mainly because it's fresher and it's recently washed up. So what I look for before I go out and forage is if there's been a storm out in the water, because, you know, a lot of things have been washed around and chopped off because of the storm. And you know there's going to be a harvest. If there's been a storm on the land, however, you know that all the toxins and things like that have been washed into the bay. So, not so good. So you look for a storm out at sea. There's some fresh stuff over there.
So you were saying that you look for the little piles. So do you go and like investigate the different little piles?
Yeah, I do. So if you're in Melbourne, obviously you take a glove. Uh-huh. But here, I wouldn't worry so much.
Take a glove just in case of rubbish?
Yeah, rubbish and needles and dog poo. Blue bottles, there's been a lot of blue bottles here. But it depends where you are.
Right.
Obviously.
Yeah, so the seaweeds are very seasonal, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. In autumn, there's a whole range of stuff. So you get quite a lot of greens, quite a lot of reds, and some little browns, interesting ones. Really fascinating. It's a really good time to harvest. Whereas winter, you've got kelps, and do you often see sea grapes just on the edge of autumn, winter, and quite a few reds. Yeah, so it changes. And literally, like as you've seen down there, the beach is just empty, whereas autumn is full.
Chock-a-block. I wonder, do you know why that might be?
Less light, colder waters, that's why. And the browns and the reds, they like cold water.
Chris picks up a brown leafy seaweed with tiny little olive-like structures on it.
So this is sargassum. Have you heard of the Sargassum Sea?
No, I haven't.
So up in the north, there's a sea full of this. And in America, they had a huge problem in California with this. It was in abundance and it was coming from there, all washed up, and it floats. See the little floats on there? So they're empty, and that's what helps them to float on the top of the water.
Chris points out a tiny little pink seaweed growing on the hunk of sargassum we're inspecting.
See that little pink one?
Yeah. Oh, they're so cute.
And the corallines, they have calcium in them, so they're more like a bone.
True, that is quite hard. It's almost like a seashell.
You would have seen them on the beach growing, and they turn white over a while. So that's the calcium in them.
Right. You can't eat them like this, though?
You can break it down. So you could pulverise it down into powder and use that. There's quite a lot of different ones of those. So coralline and the jarnias and this one here, which is more like a little frill.
Yeah, it's really cute.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I've drawn that one a couple of years ago.
Yeah, because that's the other way you come to this, right, as a botanical artist.
Yeah.
So you first started by drawing seaweeds.
Yeah, I did. And then I realised that they weren't plants. I literally was drawing a Neptune's necklace for an exhibition. And I cut it in half and realised that there was little holes in it all the way around. And it was also sporing. Like, it was, when I found it was in a rock pool and there was all of this sperm in there. It was everywhere. And I thought, it's something different here. So I drew it, yeah. Put it under the microscope and drew it. And yeah, and that's kind of my realisation of, hey, these are different.
Algae, indeed, are very different to plants. Algae belong to the protist kingdom, and the common ancestor goes so far back that it would have been a single-celled organism. Seaweeds technically are macroalgae, and although they can photosynthesize, they lack other plant structures, such as vascular tissues, roots, stems, leaves, and flowers.
So how would you process this? Like, do you just give it a good wash?
Yep. And a lot of the time, if you've got pristine water like this, is fairly pristine, give it a good wash and...
You just chuck it in the waves?
Yeah. Use stainless steel scissors if you can, or a knife. And with this, with the golden kelp, it's quite... If you feel it there, it's really quite tough in the middle.
Oh, yes.
You really only want the end fronds like that.
Okay. Yeah, the soft, fresh grass.
Yeah. So I would put those in the dehydrator. Uh-huh. So just make sure all the sand's off them. And you can blanch them if you want, but what I found with the browns is they lose a bit of their quality when they're blanched. But if it's coming from water that's not so pristine, definitely blanch it.
Blanching seaweeds is important to kill off any bacteria or other microbial activity that may not be friend to the human intestine. But this will only address the contamination living on the seaweed. Sometimes seaweeds can accumulate heavy metals, such as arsenic, from growing in polluted waters. Seaweeds are also known to be concentrated sources of iodine, which is an essential mineral which supports metabolism, growth, and brain development. However, excess iodine can accumulate in the human body and has been associated with thyroid dysfunction. So, Chris says, just be careful with where you forage and how much you eat.
What's your favourite way to eat seaweed?
I love it in the soup. The ulva, which is the sea lettuce, we often use to wrap things in, a little bit like nori. So you can wrap egg and rice and things like that in it. You'll definitely see some of that in town. It's everywhere. You can use them in empanadas, like my partner's from Chile, or his parents are. So they would use like the kelp stipes, the long pieces on the kelp, and cut that up into pieces and put that in as a meat substitute. A lot of people ask me about quality and you know, what you should be looking for. And they'll pick this up, say...
Chris picks up a hunk of seaweed, which has started to go white and shriveled around the edges.
Mm-hmm. But can you tell why you wouldn't eat that?
I mean, it just looks a bit old.
Yep. So you wouldn't eat that if it's a vegetable?
No.
Yeah. When the seaweeds are on the beach too long, or if they've been floating on the top of the water too long, they'll start to get this white.
Ah, yep.
You know, is this what you'd be eating... If you were picking it in your garden, would you look for that, or would you look for something that's really fresh and good colour?
I'm going to take a little bite of this one. But it's very salty. It tastes like getting dunked by a wave at the beach.
So salt then? Mm. Is that what you're getting?
Oh, kind of like oysters.
Oh, unami.
Mmm.
Yeah, see, I would be getting that one over there. Because it's closer to the water, yeah.
What's... Do you ever use the seaweed in your art practice for, like, pigments?
I use them for pressing. I've been finding some amazing ones lately because, you know, some of them are just too good to eat. And they press up really well.
So first comes ecology, second comes art, third comes soup.
Yeah, that's my priorities.
That was Chris Rockley speaking about the miraculous mucilaginous world of edible macroalgae on Gunditjmara country in southwest Victoria.
You're listening to Out of the Blue on 3CR Community Radio. Back after this.
Living with arthritis can bring tough questions. How do I manage the pain? What treatments work? Will it ever get better? It can feel overwhelming. That's why the Arthritis Info Line is here to help. It's a toll-free service with trained staff who understand arthritis and can provide answers, support and resources. If you're living with arthritis or caring for someone who is, call 1-800-011-041 or visit arthritisaustralia.com.au/infoline. You don't have to face it alone.
A 3CR supporter.
You're listening to Out of the Blue, and we're hanging out with scientific illustrator and nature tutor Chris Rockley to talk about the ins and outs of seaweed foraging. After we poked around at the seaweed on Convincing Ground Beach, Chris and I drove into Portland town to investigate the seaweeds growing at the dock.
So there's a really good reason I've brought you here.
Yes.
It's because it's in a port and very similar to Melbourne, and it's got the same problems as well. So we've got all the invasives you can probably imagine on this port. So what's happening here, foraging wise? Yes, all of these great seaweeds are here, and the invasive ones are really highly edible. But on the same token, you've got boats letting their toilets out, and you've got a whole lot of host of pollutants that could affect us as well, right?
As we walk out over the water, Chris points out the twirling garden of seaweeds growing on the edge of the dock.
So I'm going to get down on your tummy for this.
I'm down for that.
And the way these are attaching is really on all of the crustaceans and everything in here.
Oh, okay. So the crustaceans, like the little the gastropods, they create the crevices that the spores can go
into. That's it.
Yep.
So if it weren't for them, the seaweeds wouldn't be here.
No. Yeah, so the same thing happens. And the reason they're here is because the same thing happens on ships. Mm. They get all the barnacles and everything like that in there. And then all of these invasive seaweeds start growing on there. So we've got the wakame, the undaria, red sea lettuce. We've got sea lettuce growing here. The thing with sea lettuce, it loves nutrients. So it loves nutrient from the coast. So a bit of poo, a bit of fertilizer. That's where you'll find a lot of sea lettuce.
So all of this, the nutrients run off the land into the water.
Yeah, so there's a drain just up there. And you'll find a lot of sea lettuces along that area there.
So if you see sea lettuce,
a lot of it,
then you know that that's probably not a good place to take it from, because it's probably a place where there's high nutrient loads along with other contaminants.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you see little bits of sea lettuce, probably means that it's just kind of growing opportunistically.
You'll see it usually in shallow areas, but generally, if you see a lot of it, just be highly aware that. That's what it could be. This is wakame. And I'm going to remove one because it's highly invasive.
So, oh, they feel great in the fingers, though.
Yeah, they do. They're a bit different to normal kelps, as they are quite flimsy and slippery.
Yeah, it's really different to on the beach where they've been kind of tossed around by the storms. Wow, and the texture is so nice.
Yeah, so you can have baths in it and all sorts of things in it.
Oh,
will
baths.
Restore, yeah. If you put this in fresh water, it'll ooze. Phacoidin, I guess it is. They let this ooze out. So that will go into your skin. So with wakame, it's these bits, the fronds that you're eating, and you leave the stem. These are both winter seaweeds. They're like the colder region, and they're not harvesting them in Japan anymore because of the radiation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so a lot of Japanese people, when they come to forages and things, they're like, oh my god, they're here, you know. Even though they've got a bit of nutrient and they're taking on heavy metals, better than radiation.
That's really sad.
Yeah.
Because I imagine there would have been a whole foraging culture for seaweeds in Japan.
There was, and yeah, they love it. They absolutely love it. Mm. So to see them here, They get so excited. And I can understand why.
How do you tackle it?
Well, the only way they've been getting rid of it is just cutting it off. Yeah, there are other methods, but they're highly pollutant and they would just about kill everything else. Mm. So it really loves sandy areas, like sandy knolls. Mm. Apollo Bay is another one that's been hit really bad. Mm. And it has a lot of sand, built-up sand areas. Yeah, there's a few areas in Port Phillip Bay as well that have got it. Mornington's one of them. What they're doing is basically like the urchins going in there, pulling it out, like big culls. Wow. Of urchins and this wakame.
Both wakame and red sea lettuce are highly edible, so much so that these invasive seaweeds are now being harvested and sold commercially.
There's quite a few farms in Tasmania where their water's a bit more pristine, and that's where they're harvesting the undaria and the red sea lettuce. Both of them have become commercial enterprises.
Wow.
And they're tasty. Yeah.
Yeah, I have heard the concerns of commercialising pest species in that it creates the demand for it.
That's right.
You'd be hoping that the industry would maybe commercialise itself to death.
Yeah, on the same token, I don't really want them taking away native species either.
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad that they're doing these.
The third and final stop on our Portland seaweed foray is Crumpets Beach.
The reason I brought you here is because there's always lots of kelp and a rocky shore, so you always get the deep kelp squashing up.
Chris leads us towards a great leathery hunk of seaweed.
This is bull kelp. Look how big it is.
Whoa, it's bigger than you.
Yeah. See how leathery it is. You can literally cut this down the middle. So Zoe Britton, who's part of the Deakin University, she did a study on Indigenous use of seaweeds. Mm. What they would do is put mutton birds in them. So slit them, create an area here, cut, and then slit down the middle with I guess they would have had stone implements back then. But I've done it with a knife before, see how thick it is?
Mm.
And then once you create a hole, you can start to put your finger in there and open it out, and it creates an airtight area.
Oh.
So they would put mutton birds in there and all sorts of other food, I guess.
And then cook them?
Like or that? Use it as preservation.
Oh.
So it'd last in there because of the salt and it'd dry like that. It's a way of preservation, preserving it, and transportation. So they could keep it for a bit longer.
Wow.
And water as well, apparently, they would put in them. Yeah, so they'd make them into carrying bags. So I've done sculpture workshops with this stuff to turn into all kinds of stuff. And there was one woman in Lawn that made a dress out of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was like an artwork that was in real time. So she'd made this beautiful dress out of this stuff and then dripped water on it really slowly, and it just went back to form. Because it literally, if you put a dried piece of seaweed like that in water, it would just literally go back eventually.
What's the best thing you've made out of it?
I've made a few little dilly bags out of it, but I've seen lamps and all sorts of stuff made out of it. So as a leather substitute, it's useful, but yeah, don't get it wet.
Not gumboots then?
No. This one I call hairy armpit plant.
I feel like this is more like hairy armpits.
Yeah, no, this one looks good, it's hairy armpits.
Oh, it does, it has hairy armpits, I see.
Epsilaris, yeah. Not so edible.
Yeah, I don't think I normally eat hairy armpits.
Chris and I scurry along the beach, poking at piles of seaweed and scuttling away when the waves sneak up behind us. And although Chris is teaching me the Latin names of the seaweeds, explaining their habits and anatomy and phylogeny, beneath all of that is play. A sense of play is the very core of how Chris guides people to interact with the natural world when she leads foraging workshops.
When you're a child, all you want to do is find out what things are, and you're not worried so much about what you can't and can do. You just want to know what everything is, everything. That fascination for life hasn't left you yet. when you become an adult, you've been told you can't do this, can't do that. Don't go in that area because of this, this and this, and it's too scary and there's sharks and all of these sort of things. So what I've been trying to do is install that in adults and give them the freedom to walk in the water and not worry so much, because I become that adult that's holding their hand. So they're allowed to, you know, wander in the water with their shoes off. They'll pick something up and they'll go, "Hey Chris, do you reckon I could eat this?" So it's just like having a bunch of little kids walking along behind you, holding their hand in the water. I love that. And I love watching an 80-year-old woman or someone that's got a disability walk in the water and having that freedom to play and to observe and just look and not have to do too much. Just enjoy it.
Chris Rockley, what a delight. If you're keen to play among the seaweed with Chris, you can keep an eye out for future workshops on her website, which is www.chrisrockley.com. She's also made a seaweed forager's quick guide, which are hella handy to take with you when you're going for a little frolic down at the coast. I've got one and I love it. Music in today's show came from Blue Dot Sessions. You can find that info as well as a link to Chris's website in the show notes on our webpage at 3cr.org.au/radioblue. It's time for me to get out of here. Until next time, stay salty, friends.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.